So let's start with our lecture verse. The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it, remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. Very good to see so many of you here today. So I'm going to talk a little about how the lotus blossom is nourished by the mud that its roots are in. I'm going to quote from Reverend Master Jiyu here. The stem of the lotus, and I'm non-genderizing or degendering, is that a word? Probably not. This verse from its original. All people know suffering, which is as the mud in which the lotus takes its root. All know the lotus blossom which gazes at the heavens. Few indeed know how to nourish the root of true religion within themselves in the mud of ignorance that surrounds them. And fewer still know how to make the root flourish and grow the long stem needed in the dark water before the flower can bloom in the clear light of day. So today we've celebrated one of our monthly memorials for our beloved teacher and our former abbess, Reverend Master Jiyu, expressing our deep gratitude for all she passed on to us. And so what came to mind, as I mentioned, was to talk a bit about one of her earliest teachings, at least that I heard, thus this quote from the introduction to her book, Zen is Eternal Life, in which she says she is attempting to show how to grow the long stem of the lotus from the root to the blossom, for the stem of the lotus and Zen training are identical, she says. So I found that always to be a very helpful metaphor. As most of you know, the lotus blossom is widely used as a symbol in Eastern religions for purity of heart, for enlightenment, awakening to the truth. And I wanted to focus today, as I mentioned in particular, on the importance of recognizing, accepting, appreciating the mud or the muck that the lotus takes root in and which nourishes its growth and eventual blossoming. When I first came to train here at the Abbey in the fall of 1973, at the age of 21, I was somewhat desperate to change the direction of my life, as I was rather disappointed with myself and feeling I had made a mess of many things and had missed important opportunities, and feeling a little bad about myself. So I was much helped during one of the first Dharma talks given to resident lay trainees by Reverend Master Jisho, who was the guest master here at the time, when he taught us to not worry about the past and to appreciate the compost of our lives, that everything that has happened, everything we've got up to, could be offered to the compost pile and would eventually become wholesome nutriment for our lives of Buddhist practice. Any gardener, he was an avid gardener, any gardener knows the importance of good compost in our soil. And since I started gardening, I've appreciated the value of really good dirt. So this was actually at the time a very great comfort to me, and somehow made it possible for me to go forward. And it continues to be a comfort whenever I remember it in the midst of disappointment arising in the mind with regard to my training or expectations being dashed in general. So although not easy to see at times, it's been my experience on occasions that the Buddha nature makes use of everything in the end, actually at all times. So there's never a time when we cannot take at least one step forward and do something about ourselves. That to me is one of the most liberating aspects of Reverend Master's teaching to me. Buddhist practice is simply doing something about ourselves as best we can, letting go of attachment to a separate, selfish self and that always there is the going on, becoming Buddha. The gathering up of the compost and leaving it to sit, settle, break down, and transform itself into something useful for the benefit of oneself and others. Ultimately, nothing is wasted. The one thing that is always doable and that no one can ever take away from you is the ability to do something about yourself. This has been very liberating to me. Of course, we learn in the process about that which is not to be done, that which is good to do, and that which is of greatest benefit to ourselves and other beings, as life presents new situations to us. It's not uncommon to think that one has to get to some rarefied place or state of being before one embarks on serious spiritual practice. We seem to encounter this rather a lot, especially in the guest office. Or even after meditating and training for some time, when things don't go as well as expected, when things seem to be falling apart, or when challenged with difficult situations, maybe way out of our comfort zone, we may feel it's not possible to effectively continue our practice, or that the training isn't working after all, or hasn't been good enough, etc. In other words, if only I or we had trained harder, better, etc., this unfortunate situation would not have happened. Isn't it supposed to be different? Why have things gone wrong when we've been living a spiritual life? Isn't our practice supposed to prevent unhappy occurrences? Does that sound familiar at all? Something I've suffered from time to time. And sometimes in major ways. I've certainly experienced waves of this from time to time. Sometimes big waves that have kind of blown me over. However, my remembrance of Reverend Master's teaching of the laws of the universe, of course, always came in and was very helpful and would come home to me in a deeper way at such times. The universe is indeed not answerable to my personal will. And yes, all things are impermanent, so best to let go of clinging to expectations and take refuge in the constant flow of that which is greater. And the law of karma is inevitable and inexorable, and we don't know when some old karma will come to the surface and affect our current situation. So the importance of being mindful and keeping the precepts of body, speech, and mind, as they will shape our present and future lives, and I believe future generations too. I remember the sense of deep disappointment and discouragement I felt, and no doubt others did, when a very respected senior monk left our community and returned to lay life some time ago, which, by the way, happens pretty much in all religious communities, unfortunately, from time to time. I remember feeling like, at the time, I was wading through a swamp, feeling awful, until one day, after maybe a few weeks, it dawned on me that I was expecting the lotus to appear in some pure, rarefied space, as in outer space, somewhere else. I had this vision of like, oh gosh, what was I expecting? Somehow detached from the real world, from what was happening now. And that in fact the muck that I was experiencing was feeding that lotus. I have to say it completely changed my perspective at the time. And although I felt very sad and I was able to offer merit for the person, I went on in faith. I was able to go on in faith. And I will say, although never easy, keeping going in your training over the years and sitting still with the smaller and the larger disappointments as they arise helps enormously in opening to a bigger picture. And having had many disappointments, which of course I, you know, create in my own way, over the years, become more able to shift your perspective more quickly. one of the great blessings of training and keeping going. So opening to a bigger picture, a wider and deeper perspective, bringing great relief and peace. So seeming adversity as we encounter it eventually makes very good compost. Not easy, but it works. It's about the only thing that really works, actually. So I'd like to bring into this conversation some quotes that I feel are related to this topic. Some of you have heard us quote from this little book, the sayings of Kodo Sawaki Roshi to you. Yeah, and it's published a couple of years ago. And you can see mine is very well used. I started marking all my favorite quotes, and then it got to where I had to give up because I was marking the entire book, you know. But Sawaki Kodo Roshi was a very great Japanese Zen master of the last century. I think he died in 1959. Was it 69? Not long after Reverend Master Jiyu was training in Sojiji. At the time of Reverend Master Jiyu's Kensho and her transmission that followed, and when her master, Koho Zenji, the head abbot of Sojiji, when he wanted to certify Reverend Master as a master and certify her religious understanding, which is typical, he checked with other masters of his time, and that was in particular with Kodo Sawaki Roshi. And so we have the wonderful story that has, of course, has been passed on to us of, even though he was quite elderly and not well at the time when she saw him, I gather he reported back to her master that he had seen. And so she was certified. And so from this book and these teachings, there are many sayings in this book, and they are little sayings that one of his disciples, Uchiyama Roshi, made note of over the years as he was training with Sawaki Kodo. And some of them are out of context, but some of Uchiyama's disciples put them into little chapters with different headings. So I have a few quotes that I think are related to this topic from a section called, or entitled, "To You Who Are Going Out of Your Mind, Trying So Hard to Attain Peace of Mind." And something about that appealed to me, you know? I mean, I know what that's like, and somehow when I think about some aspects of our world today, it's a little like that, isn't it? So Sawaki Kodo says, "When peace of mind only means your personal satisfaction, then it's got nothing to do with the Buddha Dharma." These are fairly short, so I'm just going to give you a few of these, all right? He also says in this section, "The Buddha Dharma teaches limitlessness. That which is measureless has to be accepted without complaint." Reverend Margaret gave a lovely talk the other day on complaining, which fits in very well here. And then he says, "You lack peace of mind because you're running after an idea of total peace of mind." Remember, he lived through both wars, world wars, and in Japan was a Zen monk and teacher after World War II, so he went through a lot, he saw a lot, and somehow his teachings resonate with what's happening in our world today, I think. "So you lack peace of mind because you're running after an idea of total peace of mind. That's backwards. Be attentive to your mind in each moment, no matter how unpeaceful it might seem to be." Again, the muck. If you feel covered in dirt for a while, just sit still with it and appreciate it. It does not mean there's something fundamentally bad or wrong with you. But there might be something to look at, to learn from, of course. "Great peace of mind is realized," he says, "only through practicing within this unpeaceful mind. It arises out of the interplay between peaceful and unpeaceful mind." A couple more. "There isn't any world in which everything is right. Nonetheless, everyone is wandering around in search of it. What good does it do to wander around endlessly or to cry yourself to sleep in desperation? It's a matter of sitting immovably in the world and not wandering around. And of course, he's talking about more than physical travel and movement, but the wandering of the mind and the looking outside of ourselves constantly for the source of satisfaction and peace and enlightenment. As Great Master Dogen says in Rules for Meditation, also about not having to travel to travel to other dusty countries to find the truth. Those dusty countries can be all kinds of pursuits, right? Of beauty, of knowledge, of political power, whatever it might be. And then Suwaki Koto also says, in the Buddha Dharma, the ordinary person and Buddha are not two different creatures. Peace of mind isn't about sitting there like a bump on a log. So that, in contrast to sitting immovably. So don't try to look like a Buddha, but be a Buddha. So we can take heart. And the lotus has to stay rooted in the muck of daily life to be able to survive and to fulfill its beautiful function. All of our mistakes and faults and all the difficult stuff that seems to be thrown at us at times, whether it's loved ones leaving us or dying, disharmony in our family or our community, our nation, our children suffering an illness, a global pandemic, our earth being wrecked by pollution, peoples and nations fighting and killing each other. Everything that has happened or is happening and will happen, when we sit still in the midst of it and keep a compassionate and bright heart and mind as best we can, will settle and become nourishing compost for our lotus and help to keep the stem of our training strong and upright. And I think then we will also begin to see the many jewels around us that we don't notice when we don't appreciate, when we don't stay grounded in the muck. The many other lotus blossoms. The lotus bud and blossom will be fed and naturally develop, and no harm will come to it as our faith grows. We don't have to worry about making the blossom of awakening happen. It's not something we fabricate. It will take care of itself. Enlightenment will take care of itself. So just let it be. Stay grounded in daily life practice, and your lotus will eventually shine. Reverend Master Jihu showed us the way to do this, and we offer her our gratitude again today. One last quote from Suwaki Koto Rushi. Again, the Buddha Dharma is realized through practice. Practice means to practice an approach to life with zazen, or serene reflection meditation, as the measure, with zazen as the measure. Whenever this practice is found, peace of mind is fully actualized. The practice is our comportment in every aspect of our lives. And he then quotes a poem by an 18th century Jodo Shinshu priest. Only when you pull on the cord in the deep autumn fog, with all of your heart, does the bell sound in the rice paddy on the mountain. And I'm going to finish with just a little bit of that offertory that we just got to hear, that I managed to sing out of the stupa. We pray that when we are in delusion, the jewels of enlightenment shall shine of themselves, and that when we are in enlightenment, the circle of Japonica shall be high in the blue sky. Let us walk on the way to enlightenment with all living things. Let's do it. Okay. And that's my shorter talk for today. Well, that's unusual for me. So nice to see you all, and hope to see you next week as well.